Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shock Gift Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me is...
Hello, Perry Nemiroff here.
And I would like to thank Perry for joining me. We're recording this a day or two after Comic-Con, and she was just in San Diego, and I appreciate her joining me. I'm sure she's really exhausted from that.
Slowly recovering.
So the movie that we're going to be talking about this week is a movie coming out on the 29th, very limited release, I think, in New York and L.A. And other big cities like maybe Chicago, but it's going to have a bigger release throughout the whole country throughout August, I assume. It's the first film from filmmaker Joe Cornish. He wrote and directed this film, and this was also produced by one of his good friends and collaborators, Edgar Wright, of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. The movie is Attack the Block, and this movie has been getting a lot of buzz since it premiered in the U.S. During South by Southwest this year, and it already came out in the U.K., and it's doing pretty well over there, and there's a question of how well is it going to do in the U.S. So, Perry Nemiroff, what are your thoughts on Attack the Block? And this film kind of fits this 80s nostalgia, like kids on a mission type of movie, something we saw similar to earlier this summer in Super 8. Do you think that this compares to Super 8?
This compares to Super 8 in terms of it being about a group of kids in the midst of an alien invasion, in a way, even though Super 8 wasn't really an invasion. But otherwise, in terms of tone, it wasn't the same at all. This was much more lighthearted and fun, but still pretty terrifying and suspenseful and gory, too. But between the two, I've got to say, I think I had more fun with Attack the Block.
Yes, this is a very fun and exciting movie. I guess, how do you think it's going to do this weekend? It's going up against a number of films coming out, like Cowboys and Aliens and Crazy Stupid Love. What are your thoughts of how it's probably going to do this weekend?
Well, I mean, clearly going against two wide releases like that, when this is only getting, I'm not sure how many theaters, but I can't imagine very many. It's not going to crack the top 10 in the box office, but what something like this needs is it needs legs and positive word of mouth, and hopefully it'll make an impact like that. I mean, looking back at Paranormal Activity, look what something like that did. I think the odds of that happening with this are kind of slim, but it certainly deserves it.
Yeah, this is a very, very good movie. And I don't know if me just saying that this is a good movie does this movie any justice. It's a popcorn film. It's a movie that you'll sit down and watch, and you'll have a great time from beginning to end. And more so that this movie is entirely very well made and very tight. I think no movie like this should be this well made. I think to stuff like what Edgar Wright has done in the past, like movies like Scott Pilgrim or Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz, that those are just completely fun movies and they're just very tight. And there's really no plot holes. Every line in it is very... Every line in it has something to do with the movie, and nothing is really throwaway. That it's very economic that way, I think.
It's probably useful to point out that just because like a movie is fun too, doesn't mean it's not well made and it's kind of just, you know, cheap entertainment. This really is a very well done film in every aspect, just in terms of the script and the cinematography, the acting, everything here is top notch.
This movie is actually getting some, I don't want to say backlash quite yet, but there's a lot of people out there wondering, will this movie live up to the hype that it has been generating? So many people who have seen it can't stop talking about it. Perry, do you think this movie does live up to that hype, or do you think it falls flat?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you can compare this to Super 8 in that kind of respect. Think about how that promotional campaign built up Super 8. You know, so much. And I think that did suffer a little bit because of it. You know, we spent months with this whole viral marketing campaign, you know, revealing tiny pieces of the film at a time. And then when the big day came, we expected some, you know, epic movie. And that had some issues. I mean, I love Super 8, but yeah, there were some problems with that. Whereas, this, there's just very, very little to pick on and not to like. The characters are incredibly likable. The effects are incredibly well done. Those monsters are unforgettable. Those designs are perfect. One of my biggest issues with alien invasion type movies is the reveal of the alien. Because, I mean, normally it looks absolutely ridiculous. Of course, I don't know what an alien looks like, but can't help but to giggle a little or just not take it seriously. But here, I mean, I don't want to call the aliens cartoonish, but they almost, they don't have that, you know, that reptile type look that most of them go for, which makes it as though they're not trying to parallel it with reality, which ultimately makes it more digestible.
Yeah, these aliens are effective in the fact that you are really scared and terrified of them, and you're terrified for the kids that are running away or chasing after them. I definitely agree with you that the creature creation of this movie is very well done and very imaginative. That this could have easily been, and this is a credit to the film, it could have easily been laughable the way that these aliens were. And I applaud the fact that there's very little CG in this film. Not to say that there is, I think it's very, very small, maybe like less than 5%, just to make it all smooth or whatever. But the aliens are tangible. They're real. Not real aliens, but they're people in suits, and the effects are very well done in that they're all very practical. There's actually a line in this movie that kind of sums up the creature creation that, hey, look, you made a puppet. Wow, this is a really cool puppet, you know. There's a point in this movie where, which is very effective to the film, where they're running away from these aliens, and you're not laughing at it. It's kind of in slow motion, and you're not laughing at it because you are invested emotionally to the characters. And I think that just heightens the special effects more so, because the script is just really solid.
You describe them as being tangible. I actually think that what makes them so appropriate is that they're almost like a little vague looking, that we can't see the teeny tiny fine details, and almost like the less we see, the better and the more believable it is. I mean, ultimately they're just big black blobs with glowing mouths, and it's surprisingly convincing.
Yeah, I mean, we just see their teeth and them snarling, and you're really afraid while watching this film, because it just goes at this really great pace. There's really very little criticisms about this movie, because right now, as it stands at the end of July, this is my favorite movie of the year. My number one movie of the year, my number two movie of the year is The Tree of Life. I usually go in for more art house or foreign films. That's usually my taste. But this movie, well, it's a foreign film. It's from England. But this movie is just so well made, and that I can't help but not fall in love with the characters in it, namely.
One of my few criticisms, actually, is that the character Sam, the woman that these kids rob in the beginning of the film, I found it a little ridiculous that she just happens to show up at all times, you know, right in the middle of their mess.
Yeah.
That reunion wasn't 100% believable to me, but they're just such a fun group to be with that, I mean, I completely, it didn't affect my reception of the film at all. It didn't affect how much fun I was having.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, for all the mistakes or stumbles this film has, which are very little, I want to emphasize that the filmmaking is just so good that it kind of covers up that stuff, and the cast is just so good. Like, a lot of people during Super 8 were saying that these kids are so great, like they're a great group of kids. I think these kids are much better actors, and namely, like, a lot of them, this is like their first movie. The main kid who played Moses, I know that this was his first film, and he's the star of this film. He effectively carries this film on his shoulders from beginning to end, where at the beginning of the movie, you kind of hate this guy, and he's 100% unlikable, and you just hate him. But by the end of the film, it's 180. You fall in love with him, and you love him, and you root for him.
It's tough to compare the two groups when these are more comedically based, but not Moses, actually. And the kids from Super 8 are going for your, you know, standard heartwarming Goonies-type feel, almost. Yeah. But yeah, if you want to make a big comparison, look at the character arcs between this and Super 8, and there's a glaring difference. The kids in Super 8, yeah, they go on their adventure, but they're ultimately the same as they were in the beginning when the film comes to an end, whereas here, you know, you go on a complete 180 with these guys. You hate them to death in the beginning, and in the end, it breaks your heart to see certain things happen. As funny as this movie is, it you know, it's a tearjerker at a point or two.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen this movie four times as of this recording before the movies come out, and I guess that's just a tale of the kind of access that we get as New York press. But every time I watch it, and it holds up on its fourth viewing for me. That you're right, Perry. This is an emotional roller coaster. as fun as it is, I mean, I think there's a line in it where one of the kids pests. He says, "This is the craziest night of my life, and I'm really scared. But at the same time, this is sick." And then they go on this really awesome chase. I think that's how I feel while watching this movie, that there's highs and then there's lows. And you're right that this is a tearjerker because you're so invested into these characters and the story that and Joe Cornish, it's pretty cool that this is his first film, and I look forward to seeing what he's going to come out with in the future. I know he co-wrote the new Steven Spielberg movie that's coming out this Christmas, Tintin. But outside of that, I don't know what else he has on board. Perry, you were in San Diego for Comic-Con. Did you go to the Adventures of Tintin panel?
I did not attend that panel. I caught the tail end of the press line, but that's about it.
So that's like one thing I'm looking forward to is the career of Joe Cornish going forward. Anything else you want to talk about with Attack the Block?
Just to go see it. I looked up the numbers and it's only hitting 8 theaters, but if one of those 8 are near you, 110% something I'd recommend, and I am positive you are going to love it.
Yeah, one thing I wish this movie had a proper, I don't want to say proper release, but proper marketing behind it, that this is probably the best movie of the summer, in my opinion, and it's not getting any buzz or any traction or any... I mean, 8 theaters is definitely really small compared to something that you would get for Thor or Green Lantern or Transformers 3. And this movie blows those movies out of the water, hands down, just for the sheer level of how much fun you'll have while watching this movie.
Just look at the ones coming out this week, too. Cowboys and Aliens, Crazy Stupid Love, The Smurfs. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Not like I've seen them all, but I bet you Attack the Block can compete or even top them.
Yeah, I would put Attack the Block against any movie that came out this summer. That one thing I always found really cool when I would see this film is not only were like kids excited or people in their 20s, but it seemed like the older people in my audiences, like critics who were like in their 60s and 50s, loved this movie as well. So I do think it does hit the demographic because it's just a really good, solid film. Yes, everyone who's listening to this, if it's playing in your town, please, please, please see Attack the Block. And this movie was also getting criticism for having so many free screenings that people won't actually pay for it because the people who want to see it have already seen it and have seen it for free. I guarantee you I'm going to see this movie again and again and definitely pay for it because I feel I should contribute to seeing it 4 times for free already.
In a case like this, I think that free screenings might entice people to want to go pay for it. I mean, as a working critic, I saw it for free. I have definite plans to go this weekend and pay for it because, I mean, honestly, I think it just deserves my money and I want to be there to support it.
Yeah, I mean, there's very few movies that actually deserve your money. This one deserves your money and attention, definitely. I'm glad this movie wasn't in 3D, and I'm also glad this movie... there's also this talk that maybe they would subtitle the film because this film is very British, and the kids in it are Where this movie takes place in London is South London, and South London is kind of really gritty and grimy and very, I guess, dangerous. It would be the equivalent to, projects in the United States where this movie would take place in England. And a lot of people wanted this movie to be subtitled because you can't really understand what they're saying because they use British slang. Do you think this film should have been subtitled?
Absolutely not. And that's the first I've heard of that, and I'm very glad that they didn't. That would take away from it. And normally, I'm one of the first to, you know, pick on something like that. I do tend to have a tough time, you know, when I want to sit back, relax, and watch a movie, trying to decipher something that I should understand. But I mean, that just kind of adds to the flavor of something like this. And it's not something that you're gonna, you know, they say, I don't know, one word instead of how we say it in American English, and you're not gonna get something. Like, everything is completely understandable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just us being Americans that it should all be pleased to us, even though this is a British film and it was made for a British audience.
Or absolutely not.
And also, I don't even think that it being subtitled would help, because what they're saying is not necessarily that important. It's how they're saying it and how they react and feel, and that's really the most important thing in this film, that you really don't need to get every single line of dialogue, but you just have to get the inflection and the urgency of those lines. All right, that was a good discussion of Attack the Block. Yes, see this movie if you have the means. When it does come out to other cities in the U.S. In a more staggered release, see it. Highly recommended. Let's talk about Comic-Con 2011. Perry, you went to Comic-Con this past weekend. This was your first Comic-Con, yes?
That I did, for my first time.
Tell us, how was Comic-Con for you? Like, when did you get into San Diego until you left?
It was quite the experience. I flew in. I left New York bright and early on Wednesday, got in bright and early on Wednesday in San Diego. So it's like I got, you know, half of an extra day there, which was nice. But still, the second I touched down there, the extra time just flew right by, because I was working nonstop. And I mean, I don't want to use the term working almost, because I had an absolute blast covering this event. When I wasn't covering something, I was writing, and it was worth every second of it. And I have to add that, yeah, there was a lot of socializing too, as I met some just fantastic people who I've read their stuff, or I've talked to them on Twitter through emails, and I finally got to put a face to those messages, which was an absolute pleasure. But yeah, I mean, I'm completely exhausted right now, and I could use a little bit of sleep still, but I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, just for our listeners, San Diego Comic-Con, I didn't cover it this year, but I covered it last year for the website that I wrote for last year. It's kind of like movie blogger summer camp. It's the one time where practically every movie blogger from all across the country meet up and cover an event and have fun, go to parties, drink karaoke, which is an essential thing to do, and just meet up. And, you know, it's exactly like summer camp is how I feel, except you're working and you're writing constantly and trying to meet deadlines, but all that stuff is really fun. Did you go to preview night on Wednesday?
I did not go to preview night. The first night I spent my time at the Shark Night 3D party, which was kind of like a party and a press op all at the same time, which was a lot of fun. The whole cast was there. They had a mechanical shark. I mean, you could see a goofy picture of me riding this shark off Shakya. But that was a good time, and there's an example of when the partying got the best of me, and I woke up a little tired on Thursday, but learned my lesson fairly quickly.
So Thursday starts. What was your favorite thing that you saw on Thursday, or you did on Thursday, I guess movie or TV-wise?
I did quite a bit each day, but you know, Thursday was the Twilight Madness. But I can't say that was my favorite. I've got to go with two things. I got to part of the summit press conference for the Twilight Saga, squeezed in these three books that Summit's also adapting, and I got to interview one of the authors. He's the author of the book Warm Bodies. Isaac Marion, and it's a book about a zombie, and the story is told from the zombie's perspective. And you know, with all the supernatural creatures we have running around the film industry, it was nice to get a really fresh take on one of the breeds out there. It's a really great book. And another thing I was a big fan of was my chance to interview Guy Pearce for the movie Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which I guess I'm not really supposed to talk about my thoughts of the movie just yet. I think the reviews have embargoed, but my excitement over the interview might hint at a little something.
Did they show? You didn't do the panel for that, so you didn't see any footage, and you've already seen the film.
Afraid of the Dark, yes.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be seeing that sometime this week, I think. There's a screening of that I'm looking forward to seeing. So what was the least thing that you enjoyed on Thursday?
The least I enjoyed on Thursday?
Was it Twilight Eclipse? a Twilight Breaking Dawn?
It's hard to say anything. It's hard to say that I didn't enjoy anything. I mean, in all honesty, I was pretty happy at just about everything I covered from beginning to end. I can't remember a time I was particularly frustrated or disappointed in something.
Wow, that's a very good experience, especially if that was your first Comic-Con.
I feel very lucky.
Yes, you should.
Why?
You should feel very lucky. So I guess Friday rolls around. What was your favorite thing that you saw on or attended on Friday?
Friday was quite the experience because that was my first time attempting to stand on a line to get into a panel, and I was doing that for Ballroom 20. So I got there 3 hours ahead of time for the Walking Dead panel, and the line was already down to the bay, something like 10,000 people long, and supposedly the last person on that line wasn't getting in for another three panels.
Oh, man.
Lucky for me, I mean, you know, press benefits, I was able to get a pass to get in, and I did see the Walking Dead panel, and there was certainly a highlight of my day, because that trailer is something special, and it's online now, so if you can track it down, it's worth watching. It's something like 4.5 minutes long, and it holds your attention just as well as the entire show does. It comes with some incredible footage. There's this highway scene at the end. I am dying to see that thing in full because it looks absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I guess kind of like one of the tricks and trades of going to Comic-Con or covering Comic-Con is that you don't plan to wait in line for one certain thing. You have to plan to wait in line for two things before that thing, you know, because one of the cool things at Comic-Con, they don't clear the room between panels. So if you want to stay in one place all day, you can. They won't clear it out, so you can stay there and then people come in and out. So I always found it weird, like, if you know something is going to be at capacity, why can't you just tell people in line, like, after that breaking point, that you're not going to get in, you know, even if they clear this place out, so people won't waste their time waiting in line and getting turned away after waiting 4 or 5 hours for something.
Yeah, that was almost like breaking my heart there, too. She had such devoted fans, and, you know, they stood on line because every time it would inch forward, it gave them a little hope, but I mean, in the end, there was no chance some people were getting into these things. Those lines were just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and that's definitely the one thing I took away from Comic-Con last year, that the lines were unbearable. But if you had someone with you that's a good conversationalist, or if you have a game of Uno, like I usually bring along in situations like that, then the time goes by really fast. I remember last year I waited in line for like 8 hours for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, for the Scott Pilgrim versus the World screening the next day after they had the world premiere of it. And I met some amazing people in line for 8 hours that we were in line together. And somewhere towards the end of our experience, we called this moment like Scott Pilgrim versus the line, because the line was ridiculously long. And I look forward to seeing the Walking Dead trailer. I haven't seen it yet. And yeah, from what I heard, 4 minutes of actual footage. That comes out in October?
Mm-hmm. October.
For that, I look forward to New York Comic Con, which is right before the premiere of Walking Dead Season 2, and I'm sure that they're going to have a presence this year like they did last year. So Saturday, what was the big thing that you enjoyed on Saturday?
There were a lot of great things on Saturday. I mean, I started my day off with a special presentation of The Darkest Hour, which is a funny thing, another alien invasion movie that's coming out later this year. And again, actually, it's something that puts a really unique spin on the design of an alien and really just the whole world it creates based on that alien's anatomy. And it's a smart concept. The footage looks great. The trailer should be hitting within a couple weeks. And we saw the premiere of the trailer, and it's something special. It is 110% something to keep an eye on. Later that day, I also enjoyed covering the roundtables for the Vampire Diaries. I am quite the sucker for that show, and I got to meet some great people. I'm also a sucker for the Scream franchise, and it was great getting to talk to Kevin Williamson there, as well as I'm a huge fan of the Scream franchise, as well as the Vampire Diaries, and he had a lot to say about the upcoming season. I'm actually surprised, because most movie press events, they don't like to divulge many secrets or spoilers, but they were pretty free to talk about where their characters are going and what to expect, which was a nice change for me.
That is very strange that they were so open and candid about the upcoming season of Vampire Diaries.
I don't think they spoiled anything per se, but they were packed with tons of insight on all the characters and where their minds are at the time. I guess that's the benefit of working on a show as opposed to a movie, where you spend so many years developing these people.
You know, I saw the first episode of The Vampire Diaries, and I just wasn't locked into it, I guess. And actually, I went to the panel at New York Comic Con last year for Vampire Diaries, and it seemed pretty intriguing, the stuff that they showed us. And it made me think, maybe I should give the show another chance.
I had a little bit of a tough time getting into it. But then again, with most of the shows that I watch, I caught up on a number of shows for Comic-Con. And most of them, it took me, like, you know, 3 or 4 episodes, if not more, to really get into it. The only show that I was hooked on from the very first minute, really, is Nikita.
Nikita.
It was through that season very quickly.
Did you go to the Nikita panel?
And then, oddly enough, I had to miss everything for it because, you know, not enough time, so many conflicts.
I heard Maggie Q had a very interesting stunt demonstration during that panel.
Something I wish I could have seen.
Did you catch the Game of Thrones panel or any Game of Thrones?
I was at the Game of Thrones panel, which was a ton of fun, too, because the whole cast was there. And they had, you know, because it's based on the book, it had a whole bunch of fans there, too, who knew, like, incredibly intricate details and brought to light a number of things that, you know, we hope to happen on the show in the future.
Yeah, and George R.R. Martin was moderating that, yes.
That he was, and he was basically part of the panel, too, which it was a nice addition, you know, on top of him moderating, people were asking him questions as well, and it was great hearing his insight. The only thing that was a little awkward about that was that they really had nothing to show. You know, they played a little montage of the season one stuff, which was exciting, but they haven't really started filming, so we couldn't see anything new.
Yeah, and that's actually another show where I watched the first episode and was meaning to watch the second one, but still haven't yet. And I've heard nothing but good things about Game of Thrones.
Now that you say that, I mean, that was one of the ones I had a tough time getting into, but once I did, I was hooked. There's probably one defining moment that got me in that show, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a certain death that has to do with some, how do I describe this? Some gold, I guess. And yeah, you'll know what I'm talking about when you hit that point in the season. And it's a pretty incredible scene.
I look forward to that, watching that. And but what's it's with the Game of Thrones panel, that's actually another panel that I heard was really hard to get into. Like, I heard that they had to turn away like something like 9,000 people for that panel because it was in Ballroom 20, yeah, and not Hall H.
That one was packed as well. I got lucky and managed to get a pass to get in, so I felt very fortunate about that. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't believe these lines unless you saw them for yourself. I mean, they wrap around the convention center, all the way downstairs, out to the bay. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it just seems like they should have stuff like that in Hall H, which holds some 30,000 people, 40,000 people, something like that. And Ballroom 20 is the second biggest room that they have, but from what I've been hearing, it seemed like TV was more of the thing this year than movies. And usually they have the movie stuff in Hall H, and it doesn't seem like any movie studio would, I guess, downgrade to go somewhere like Ballroom 20, which, yeah, I don't see movies. Any movie studio would be willing to downgrade despite the fact that they don't have that kind of big of a showing at Comic-Con, unlike TV. I heard True Blood was also like a big panel that people couldn't get into, and it really did seem like most of the TV stuff was getting more of the action than the movie stuff this year.
I wouldn't necessarily generalize it that way, as there were some pretty big movie panels, but yeah, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I walked past Hall H and they were just kind of waving people in with no line.
Ugh.
For those panels that you specifically mentioned, they were worthy of being in Hall H, and it's almost like insulting. I felt really bad for people who waited hours when, you know, a location shift could have fixed that. I only think Ballroom 20 holds something like, I think I heard like 4,500 people or something like that.
Yeah, and well, I guess Hall H is 50 or 60. I mean, Hall H is really big, and Ballroom 20 is pretty big too, but Hall H is just ginormous. And I guess I would feel bad too. I mean, people, this is like their summer vacation, you know, take time off of work to travel all the way to San Diego, and this is how they're spending their vacation, willingly waiting in line to see something, but then getting denied because it's too full. And you wouldn't want to tell them, well, you should have got here earlier, like, what, 8 hours before a panel starts? That's completely ridiculous. Or 10 hours before. I heard people were waiting in line, like, more than 2 days, like, more than 48 hours for Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's dedication to Twilight or Robert Pattinson. Was Robert Pattinson there?
That he was. Not so eloquent, as usual. I do have to commend some of the extra efforts that some of these studios and just like individual actors went to, because there were some great signings on the convention center floor, like especially the Lionsgate booth. They just did a really nice and generous job of handing out free things, bringing the actors to their booth to sign posters. The Walking Dead had a great signing. Dexter had a great signing. And I mean, I didn't wait in line to get anything signed myself, but I was just watching the action and how appreciative people are. The Vampire Diaries also had a nice signing, and I was able to watch most of that from the sidelines as well. And then you have the Twilight cast who showed up early in the morning to give breakfast to the people that were waiting online. Hugh Jackman and his Real Steel surprise. Just some really generous showings that go a long way and are really special to people.
Yeah, because At the end of the day, Comic-Con is about fans, and that's one thing I love about Comic-Con are the people that go to these things, namely people like you and me, Perry. What was like the number one costume that you saw? One cool thing about Comic-Con, people dress up like their favorite superhero or favorite anime character. Last year when I went, the number one costume that I saw was Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It seemed like every girl I saw was dressed like Ramona Flowers.
My favorite costume that I saw, I mean, I actually didn't see in person. I caught a picture of it online. Was someone was dressed up as Katniss, which, I mean, as a Hunger Games fan, it made me very excited. But one of the coolest things I saw in person was, you know, those bags that they give you when you get your pass to get in?
Yeah, those big, ridiculous bags.
Exactly. Someone took the bags and cut them up and made a dress out of them. And I was very impressed by that. I actually have a picture of it on the site. I believe it's in my Saturday wrap-up. And, yeah, some really great ingenuity there.
Yeah, I did see that picture from your write-up. That was a pretty cool costume to actually be wearing Comic-Con at Comic-Con.
I'm also giving away my bag right now. If anybody wants to check out my Comic-Con wrap-up piece, yeah, you can check out the rules there and snag my my psych bag as well as a Green Lantern ornament if you want it.
Ooh, and speaking of Hunger Games, you mentioned the Hunger Games. Was there any presence for Hunger Games? That was one thing I was a little disappointed at, that there was no like panel for Hunger Games, and when that's a huge geek property as well.
Yes, it's still not going to make up for my disappointment of there not being a Hall H panel, especially because I think it really I can't say it needed it, but it deserved it, and the fans deserved it because it's got such a big fan base and people wanted it. I mean, anything, like having the more supporting actors, the actors playing the tributes, just having them there, even if they didn't have any footage to show, everybody would have turned up just to ask them some questions, talk about the Hunger Games. People love that series. I mean, I'm included. But for what Lionsgate did have, I was very impressed. For not having a Hall H panel, Hunger Games 110% had a presence at Comic-Con 2011. The folks working at the Lionsgate booth were incredibly generous with these posters and Mockingjay pins. And ooh, Mockingjay pins turned out to be one of the hottest items you could get at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I actually saw some of those Mockingjay pins, and I wish I had one. I actually have a Mockingjay keychain, which I love to death. I feel so cool every time I, you know, open my door to my apartment. But I was actually pretty surprised that there was no panel for Hunger Games. And I did like that Lionsgate did release the motion poster of the Hunger Games before Comic-Con. That was actually a really cool poster.
It was definitely in connection to Comic-Con because the one side panel of the Lionsgate booth was decorated, obviously, with a still version of it. And then they had another panel where you can manipulate the motion poster and also access posters to other Lionsgate movies, which was really nice. And then the poster that they were giving away was a still version of the motion poster.
Very cool. So I guess to wrap up our Comic-Con discussion, what was the one thing that you took away from Comic-Con, and will you be going to covering it again for Shakya in 2012?
The one thing I took away was just, I mean, how happy I am in the line of work I chose to pursue. I just was in my element out there, as hard as it was and tough as it was. That kind of stress and pressure, I thrive off of it. And just seeing everybody respond to the work I was posting, the comments that came in, I can't even begin to tell everyone how much that means to me. And I am beyond thrilled to go back on behalf of Shakya.com next year and very much look forward to it.
Yes, and I will most assuredly be joining you next year in covering it for Shakya. I guess I do feel somewhat bad that you had to cover it all by yourself. Next year, I will definitely help out with that. And I, too, when I covered it last year, I love Comic-Con. Like that, I am, just like you, in my element when just being pulled in different directions and having to manage your time in a better way to get to here, to get to here, make interviews and put up posts. To me, stuff like that is just so thrilling and fun. And meeting all the other bloggers and having a good time, going to parties and drinking a lot and doing all that stuff hungover, I guess you really don't feel that when the adrenaline is pumping during something like Comic-Con. All right, so let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Perry Nemiroff?
You can, of course, find me at Shakya.com. I'm also at ComingSoon.net, CinemaBlend.com, and Movies.com, where you can find my bi-weekly The Hunger Games Countdown feature. And I'm on Twitter, too. You can catch me at PNemiroff. That's PNEMIROFF.
And you can follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, for now, GordonandTheWhale.com. I don't know if our listeners have heard, but Gordon and the Whale is is folding at the end of August, so I will be looking for another outlet to write for. But for now, you can catch me at GordonandTheWhale.com, AutorCast.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. I think next week we're going to talk about The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. That's the big movie coming out on August 5th, I believe, and so I'm sure we're going to be talking about that movie, and hopefully that's a good one, because I feel it's really hard to do a Planet of the Apes movie, even though there's been so many movies or TV shows or cartoons. It's really hard to balance the Planet of the Apes and make it fun. Well, A, make it fun, and B, take it seriously. Tim Burton actually knows that it's not that easy to make a Planet of the Apes movie. So hopefully this one will be a good one. From what I've seen, it looks pretty cool. So, closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye. That's the sound that I need. That's the sound that I police. That's the sound that I